we have Scott Harriet live from a payphone booth outside the local bar.
That whole input-output horse shit.
It might be. Who knows? That's okay. We're here.
Know.
You sound fine. You sound like you're a special guest. We're dialing in just for this episode.
Just the extra aura of importance.
I don't know where Paul is. He's not.
He said on the backstage that. Potential family conflict. He said, "Yeah, I think he was going to try, but
We'll see what happens." I would like to have him here. I really wanted all of us to be on this very special episode, which, by the way, for people keeping score, is episode 46. We are recording episode 46 of the Bigfoot Show on February the 17th, 2013. So I know people want to hear that up front. So there it is.
And you know, I know we were trying to get Todd Disotel for the show, and apparently there was a screw up. He wanted to do it, and I sent him emails. I think what happened is he responded to me on a different email, and I sent back to that email, and he hasn't checked it. And then I just sent him an email about a half hour ago, and he goes, "Well, I didn't hear back from you," and yet I did write back to him. But he did give a little summary of what his thought on it. Whatever you want to hear that. So,
thoughts on what? What could he have thoughts on? What could we be talking about?
I don't know. The the Melba Ketchum thingy.
We essentially today have four topics, if I can find them.
God, are we gonna have time?
There's time is endless. Time never. Of course, my hard drive will fill up at some point. But so we're gonna be talking about. Melba Ketchum, right? I remember there are four things. See if I can remember them all. We're going to be talking about Rick Dyer and his suit thing. We're going to be talking about Matilda, the sleeping Sasquatch.
And that's connected to Melba, right?
Oh, yeah, it's, yeah. All these Harrison things. It's like Project a web. It's a bullshit bouillabaisse of...
bullshit manza.
What was there, four things, or is that it?
Oh, and then we're going to
Sam,
we're
going
to reiterate. Yeah, Sam.
Sam,
oh,
we haven't heard.
I'm
all right, there he is. Good. We have had technical problems, man. Go ahead.
If I'm correct, we're wrapping it up with a 45-minute rehash of the kill no kill debate. Is that right?
Absolutely. Yes. We're going to talk about. We're going to just see if anybody's positions have changed over the course of the last couple of weeks. So, So let's just get into it. Melba Ketchum finally put her long-awaited, mythical, much-debated paper. It was out there freely for anyone with $30 on the internet to ingest. And what I think has happened, and I think we can talk about it, but what has happened is all the people who were sort of dreamily hoping that she was going to produce a significant document continue to dreamily sort of defend her, and then the whole rest of the world is sort of scratching their head and wondering what the hell, why are we even talking about this?
Yeah, a good summary.
So what did Disotel say?
Okay, here we go. Disotel is full, biatch. Sorry, I'm riffing today. Here we go, Scott. Like I said, he wrote back, "Oh, sorry, I was waiting to hear from you to see if you were going to do something." I did, Todd. I wrote back to it here in their email. He wrote, "I've read through most of it. It's just too incomplete to really judge the genomic data. The mtDNA is clear as day human, but without details or the data themselves, judging their nuclear results is not possible, Todd."
Well, there you go.
I put that into the science to layman translator, and it came out horseshit.
Well, there's a great post on the Bigfoot forums by one of their members over there, and it's in this Melba Ketchum thread, which goes on for like 1.5 million years. And I'm trying to pull it up right now, but as I've mentioned prior to recording, I have the internet connection of the mid to late 70s here. So the member on the BFF is Genes R Us.
Yeah.
And his summation, he goes on at length in this. And this is a scientist, man. This guy knows what he's talking about. And I can tell he knows what he's talking about because I have no idea what he's talking about. But when you get to the bottom, His summation says Melba Ketchum gives a paper in journal that probably in a journal that probably doesn't exist, that bypasses traditional peer review, lacks crucially important details, and no one can replicate because primer sequences are missing. So basically, even if she has something here, she's presented it in a way that is completely useless and will dismiss her out of hand by anyone who knows what they're talking about.
And this is the thing, is that I think you've got a lot of her defenders are saying, you know, claiming like she's claiming the Galileo effect, you know, she's come across as something so innovative that traditional science is not looking at it. It's not that what they're saying. They're saying, look, there could be some actual unknown primate DNA in here, but for the life of, we can't friggin' find it because it's so covered. The protocol with which it was done, the chain of evidence is murky. Apparently the actual sampling was murky. The sequencing is murky. We can't say it. We don't know. So don't say we're not saying it's not in there, but if it is in there, you know, you need like the Fantastic Void ship from 66 and shrink themselves to go down and actually see it because we're not getting it through the data you're presenting.
Right.
You know.
And she says on Facebook that there are now, and I'm trying to find the exact post, there's an awful lot of crap on her Facebook page by people. Like, people are posting, like, dating sites and things. It's really weird. Anyway, she says that it's in front of an independent evaluation. Well, isn't that what a peer review is? I mean, now it's being independently analyzed?
Well, dude, this is the most ridiculous thing, in my opinion, of the whole thing. Here she is. She's presented this peer review, right, in the last however many months, obviously was rejected by those, whoever she said it to, I forgot who it was. So she decides, in the exact opposite spirit of what science is about, well, hell, I'm going to become my own peer review of my own work. And hey, you know what? I say it's good. It's so... Right. Like you would put, how did you put it? You can't, you posted on the Bigfoot show, you said, I wish this, I was making this stuff up. It's like, it's so absurdly, psychotically anti-scientific posing as scientific.
And I'm pretty sure we called it on this show that the reaction of all of our supporters are, you can't handle the truth. I mean, that's what they're saying.
Well, I think, you know, you kind of touched on it earlier, is, when you have stuff that is this complex, I mean, like you even said, I mean, to a degree, we are relying on the expertise of the experts like Sattel and Gene Seras, that, you know, that these guys, you know, are coming from an objective place. We have no reason to doubt that. Or as like Todd said in that first interview we did with him, it's like, well, why wouldn't I want to be part of this? Hey, if there's new unknown primate, it's not like, oh, we didn't get it, so we're jealous you got it, that type of thing. It's just that it's not being, so we have to trust them, you know, what they're doing. But it's not just one person saying that. You've got Gene Zaras, you've got Todd Disattel, you've got at least two or three other established geneticists saying the same thing.
Pretty much everyone who sees what she did. And it isn't, you know, the whole point, you know, the entire premise of saying, you know, we can prove this species with DNA, which I don't say is incorrect, right? I think that you know, Disattel says it can be done. He knows what he's talking about. The entire purpose for even exploring this avenue of research is to get guys like Disattel to stand up and take notice. But when you present it in such a way that it looks like a third grader did it, I mean, honestly, this website is ridiculous. This website is absolutely ridiculous that she puts this thing on. When essentially the way that you present your findings in a way makes the very people you're trying to get the attention of dismiss you, then you have failed utterly. Then you have completely failed in what you're trying to do.
Right.
It doesn't really matter what you say anymore. It doesn't matter what's in your paper, because if you can't present it in a way that they will take you seriously, then who cares? Why waste your time? Why waste any of our time on this?
Right. It's just, you know, and again, they're not saying, no, it's not in there, but for the life of us, if it is in there, it's either contaminated with human DNA.
Right.
You're not clearly presenting a sequence.
Right.
A DNA sequence that is clearly showing an unknown primate.
And you're not presenting it in a way.
You know,
And it can't be replicated. It can't be replicated, which, of course, that's
right.
a very – if you know anything about science, you need to be able to replicate your science, right? I can't replicate it based on what you've given me. Yeah, it's just – it's I continue to think that if all she's done is made people who are already in the field, that are already enthusiasts, more excited about what she's doing, then again, she's failed. That isn't the point of it. The point is not to get Bigfoot weirdos to get, like, a bigger heart on about Bigfoot. The point of it is to, like, talk scientists into accepting what she's put out there. And she's utterly failed in that. Utterly.
The point is to answer a question. And
right.
She has not done that, bottom line.
No.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So, but I think on the positive side, through all this craziness.
what positive side?
It's a reiteration of the fact that guys like Disatel and Gene Zuros are looking at this stuff seriously. And that's kind of cool as far as, you know, for verifying eventually the species. It's 20 years ago or even 15 years ago, you may not have had someone like this until even look at it. So
yeah, it appears as though they remain open.
I was just talking with a friend of mine about this. You know, it's just so interesting about the world of Bigfoot is that all the different dimensions to it is the sociological, the scientific, the psychological. You have the kitschy aspect, which I think we all love, but there are some people who get, because it's kitschy and goofy and there's movies like Harry and the Hendersons, they just feel that wipes out the possibility that there could not actually be something similar to this out there. It's like, well, it's a joke and it's a kicker story at the end of newscasts and all that.
Right.
So I think it makes it fascinating. And unfortunately, because of that murkiness, you get folks maybe not particularly well educated, perhaps a little excitable. They get a leader in the field, and in a sense, she is a leader, someone some people look up to.
Yeah,
and they just buy what she's saying.
Well, just
go to her
Facebook page and read the comments people leave on her page. It's like, you know, it's depressing.
Yeah. Well, it'll be it would be weird because it's like, I guess kind of like the Patterson film. I don't know if you've heard about that.
What is that?
Anyway, we'll talk about it later. Is if a Sasquatch was hit by a car today, you have certain people say, well, and it looked somewhat like that. They'd go, well, see, that shows the Patterson film is true. No, it doesn't show it's true. And you'd have people who were Melba believers saying, well, see, she was right with her DNA. No, that doesn't mean she was necessarily right. It won't really matter to a lot of people, but it's just, I don't know. It just shows, like in those two examples, Patterson film and this DNA thing, it's just the evidence is just not strong enough to meet scientific standards for verification.
No, which is unfortunate. Cool. And then what's really interesting is if you look at the journal on the paper, and I did, I gave her $30. I'm not happy about it, but I really wanted to see it. Some of her,
I thought the nude photo of her she put in there was a little
over the top. Yeah, that was a little gratuitous. Yeah. Talking about her DNA collection.
That's a glamour shot.
No, one of these things that she, one of her blood samples came off a chewed downspout. Like, what exactly? I mean, why would a Bigfoot be chewing on a metal downspout? And she's showing like holes in the downspout with the teeth. I mean, I thought these things were human, right? But now you've got one with like these
gnawing
little,
on the side of a house,
gnawing on a house with pointy little teeth.
Wait a minute. I didn't quite understand what you're saying. What you're saying
she's got a picture of it in the study, right? And it's on her list of like 100 and however many samples she has. One of them is a blood sample from a dark brown aluminum downspout off the side of a house. And it was chewed on. And whatever chewed on it cut its mouth because it was chewing on metal and left some blood. And look, that's Bigfoot blood. But if you look at the holes in this thing... Remember that show that went down to Florida and they're going after like the Gator Man or whatever who was chewing on sides of cars? It looked like that. It looked like little pointy holes. And but on the other hand, these are humans, right? These are forest people. Forest people
Well, she's projected as a human hybrid, not pure human. But
whatever.
Human.
Who's chewing on downspouts?
Chews on pipes. So, you know, he's human. I got a cousin Dave who chews on pipes.
Like, you've never got one too many in you and ended up chewing on some siding before. I mean, come on.
Come on.
I'm just looking at these teeth. Whatever. The whole thing is just a farce.
It's a cluster frig. If it's possible.
I will tell you that when seeing the actual paper, it is worse than I thought it would be.
It's a hot mess.
Were there misspellings?
Yes. She has typos in, and this is the thing that's in the BFF post that I referenced earlier. She has typos in the units of measure that she's putting on there. They're like magnitudes different. I mean, they're like, it's ridiculous. I mean, I don't know. It's embarrassing. And so here's my point is it's embarrassing to everyone, right? So if you're just a regular Joe who is kind of into Bigfoot enough that you listen to this show or whatever, you've probably got people saying like, "Hey, did you see this ridiculous?" And it just makes you want to punch somebody in the neck because it's like we're not all like this.
Well, I think most people. I mean, most people who in time, I think will just show this what it is, and most people it's just she got overly excited. She's a little off probably, and then you add to that probably the additional stress of the initial peer review not getting in, and now she's desperate. And when you get desperate, whatever mental ailments you're having get amplified.
I would have agreed with you 2 weeks ago. But at this point I'm starting to think that there's more nefarious. I think she's just trying to get money out of it.
I don't necessarily doubt that. It's a scam.
It's a scam. It's a total scam.
It's a long con.
It's a total scam. I think it's a mix.
I think it's a mix. I think she genuinely believes this, but she's also probably desperate for dough. And now that's it. In other words, I wouldn't put her in the same camp as like a Biscardi, who I think is clearly a cool-headed con man.
I'm ready.
Yeah.
I wouldn't fully put her there. Because I think there's enough. There's been enough that she's posted that she does believe, but there's a mix of that psychology in there as well. So,
well, Biscardi might believe too. For all we know. Biscardi might believe.
Maybe it's Biscardi drag.
I'm just saying that she can still believe that these things are real, and have had experiences, and still be conning people out of their money. I don't think those two things are mutually exclusive.
But I don't know. I think there's a difference between.
Here's the deal.
Use it as a scam. Whereas I think like Biscardi knows he's fully scamming people. I think she's like, well, I've got this and my bank account's low and I got the proof. Here it is. And I'm going to, I'll charge $30 for it. And it's a little, I don't think it's quite that clear cut, but I agree with you that there is that, it's reasonable to think there is that element of taking advantage of those folks who have this faith in her. And wanting dough. Because, again, another remarkably anti-scientific thing. You know, science is, sure, there's money in science in a general sense, but when you're not, when you're trying to prove something through peer review and then you're going to charge for it.
I just don't think that if I brought forward proof of some, like, long-standing question about the world, whether it be Bigfoot or whatever, if I had proof of cold fusion, let's say, I have a replicatable cold fusion experiment, and I will tell you all about it if you give me $30. This will change the world. If you give me $30, you can know the secret. This is late-night television bullshit. This is not science. Learn how to earn thousands of dollars a month from the government. Just send me $40, and I'll tell you how to earn.
A photo of me wearing a clown outfit will be thrown in free.
So the other thing, the primer question, the fact that nobody knows what primer she used. This guy on the BFF is speculating that she's creating this Squatch ID kit, so she's going to be creating her own primers for sale. So, again, I think this is all just a total bullshit scam artist move. I think that it's depressing and sad, and I wish it never happened. And now,
well, and she has a huge advantage over your run of the mill hoaxer, or even your advanced hoaxer, because most of I'll take it back. All of the hoaxes to date have been something grossly anatomical, either a guy in a suit,
right,
or it's some tracks, or it's some vocals. Something, you know, something that all of us can wrap our head around. And anybody, any untrained person, any layman can look at a video and say, oh my God, that's a guy in a suit. Or they can look at some tracks and they can determine, you know, just by looking at them, obviously this is something fake. Or they can look at the information surrounding it. A normal person can come to the determination that it's a bunch of crap.
Sure.
She has the advantage, as W.C. Fields would say, if she can't dazzle them with brilliance, she can baffle them with bullshit. And
exactly.
She knows, after all this time, after all these years, it has become clear to her that she has a core following, a core fan base that is never going to abandon her. She doesn't have to worry about them. I mean, she could have literally taken a crap in a toilet and those people would still be following her. What she has in her favor is not only does she have them, but she can put out something that is scientific looking enough and with enough spin and BS and support from her followers that she can draw in other people, you know, fence sitters, people who, you know, might be wavering one way or another and they end up falling into her camp. She can count on that by the sheer fact that what she is presenting is, it's just a jumbled mess.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to have a certain level of intelligence and a certain level of knowledge to be able to wade through it.
And she can play all of the existing sort of fears that people who are enthusiasts in this field already have, that when my work is rejected by quote-unquote science, it will be because it is too radical for them to accept, and they will just keep putting us down the way they've always been putting us down. And it's so cynical. The whole thing is just so cynical, the way that she's approached this. That you know, I have this proof and science just can't accept it because my brilliance is like blinding them or something. And it's actually the exact opposite. And this website that she put up, that now she says on Facebook that she's got nothing to do with it, but clearly she does. I mean, she bought this stupid thing so that she could like have a place to put her dumb paper. And even it is replete with typos and just crap. Yeah. You know, all rights preserved.
Yeah.
All rights are preserved, Melba.
What?
Yeah.
At the bottom of the thing, it said all rights preserved.
Well, she's a geneticist, man. You know, she probably.
I suppose you got to keep them for sample purposes. You know, and it's got and then this other website, the Sasquatch Genome. What is it? Sasquatch Genome Project,
yeah,
with the picture of the Squatch children and the human children walking into the bright dawn. This is performance art, people. This is not science. This is performance art.
You know what it reminds me of? When I was a kid, and when I say kid, I mean kid. When I was in elementary school, we used to make magazines. We would take copy paper and we would use typewriters and we would type up these articles and we would cut them out and we would tape them or glue them into the copy paper, and we would take Polaroids, and we would make our own magazines. And then when we got a chance at school and nobody was looking, we'd put them in the copier, and we'd run off 10 or 15 copies for our friends. And we thought those were just the coolest things. And in our minds, any magazine out there would be proud to have us as contributors because we did such a good job putting these things together. I found one when we moved from Tulsa back to Georgia, and it's absolute crap.
Actually,
but that's what this is like. It's like a bunch of children got together and put together something that they thought was going to look cool and look scientific.
My only problem with what you just said is you also just described our show. we're like a half step up from that, my friend. But whatever.
Hey, would it be I think Brian put up the link on the Bigfoot show about what do geneticists think of the Bigfoot paper. Perhaps another quote from an actual geneticist here would be...
Yes, let's hear it. Let's hear it. A real scientist.
Okay, this is Richard Gibbs, one of the key scientists behind the Human Genome Project and director of the Human Genome Sequencing Center at Baylor College of Medicine.
So he might know what he's talking about.
Yeah, he might know. And so I don't know. This is from the Sci Guy, science blog, a gentleman named Eric Berger. So he had talked or emailed him or whatever and got this response. Quote, as a scientist, I would consider anything. The currency of scientific advance is keeping your skepticism at bay. You have to approach these things incredibly agnostically. As I read the paper, I asked, is the evidence here compelling? I don't know. Is there clear evidence of fraud? That's not apparent. It's an intriguing hypothesis. One would need to view more sequencing information before supporting the conclusion. Okay, so he's being generous. But
he's being very generous.
But at least he's not saying, yes, he's got it. I mean, again, it's not. Now we go on to Leonid Krugliak. Good guy. Great tennis player.
back in the 80s.
Princeton University geneticist. Quote, to state the obvious, no data or analyses are presented that in any way support the claim that their samples come from a new primate or human primate hybrid. Instead, analyses either come back as 100% human, that's what Disatel also said, or fail in ways that suggest technical artifacts. They make the bizarre claim that the failures might be caused by novel non-standard structure of the DNA.
That's quote, the angel DNA, right.
Yeah.
Could, yeah, see,
that's the angel
electron
DNA.
Electron micrographs of the DNA revealed unusual double-strand, single-strand. And now he's quoting the paper. Quote, electron micrographs of the DNA revealed unusual double-strand, single-strand, double-strand transitions, which may have contributed to the failure to amplify during PCR, whatever the hell that is, which would mean this DNA was different from DNA in all other known species. There's also the strange statement, this is him talking now. There's also the strange statement that they couldn't deposit sequences into the GenBank because it's a new unknown taxon. GenBank does that with no problem. So they argue that, well, it's new, so the GenBank wouldn't be able to recognize it. But as Disatel said on the show, no, if it's an actual DNA sequence, even if it's not in there, it'll recognize it as being similar to something like a primate or it's connected. It wouldn't just reject it outright.
My other favorite, like the next line, there's a figure from the paper that shows this unknown branch on this thing, and it didn't make any sense to me, and I didn't understand. I mean, it's just by looking at it, you can't make any sense of it, and what's really pleasing to me is Leonid also says that it generally makes no sense, so I'm really glad to know that it doesn't make any sense, because it didn't look like it made any sense.
And then there's another quote from Disatel on this same page, just below that says, and again, Disatel is a human origins expert at New York University who has previously tested dozens of DNA samples from people claiming to have Bigfoot DNA. We know, talked to Todd. Todd is open to the possibility of Bigfoot.
Yeah.
It's great to see that. And he states here, quote, it's clearly a fake vanity journal with lots of Shutterstock pictures, misspellings, and it was only created on February 4th, 2013. I've only read the abstract and conclusion, and neither makes any sense.
I mean, literally, this website was created 10 days before the paper was published. This idea that it wasn't done specifically just to publish the paper, that's just ridiculous. That's exactly what it was for.
I was just going to say, I mean, one thing that her defenders are pointing out is that people who are being critical of this, God, I don't even want to call it paper, this mess, is that they're pointing all their ire and their criticism at this, you know, the not the substance of the paper itself, but the website and, you know, the amateurness of it and everything. But I'm actually looking at the paper right now, and in the paper there is a supplemental table, and it's almost worth paying $30 to see this table, because it is a list of all of the samples that were submitted. So you get to see where the samples came from, the circumstances, when they were submitted.
That's fine, isn't it?
Yeah. Okay. So in fairness, we'll just put some of this information out there, and people can make their own determination from it. Six of the, I believe it's, 116? Let me check real quick. 111. So six of the 111 samples are from Jan Carter.
Right.
Yes. Of Fox fame.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
So I mean, come on, people.
wait. It gets so much better. So six of the samples.
I think, Brian, you're worrying too much how many people really, I mean.
Here's what I'd say. No, and I really want to hear this, Sam, so I want you to finish. But I'll tell you,
okay.
Just Scott, go to her Facebook page. Go to her Facebook page. These are tax-paying, voting people, and it scares the crap out of me. And you go to the Bigfoot forums. I'm going to guess half the people posting on the Bigfoot forums are either defending her or are still cautiously optimistic about her findings. It's like, come on. Pull your head out. Go ahead, Sam.
Okay, I'm sorry. It's seven of the samples are from Jan Carter. Three of those, she lists James Shirley and Igor Burstev as being co-contributors to those samples, but Jan Carter is listed as the primary on seven of these. In the circumstances box, you'll see information like hair trap. So we can assume that, you know, this hair came from a hair trap, or mucus on tree where Sasquatch was seen. So you get the idea of how this works.
Why would there be mucus on a tree?
But
hey, Jan's doing a snot rocket on an elm.
But see, Jan's are really unique in that rather than listing, you know, hair trap, we actually have names. So, for instance, we have fox's hair found in tree cave bedding area. And then for another sample, which this is just the crowning jewel, fox head hair found on old float rack fox used as a pillow in the basement.
Well, it's a good thing they aren't assuming anything.
Well, why do you
another even, hallmark of good science?
Why do you even need to test that? Because obviously it came off his head. He was in your basement taking a nap.
Yes.
Why even? I mean, that's probably one of her treasured samples, because that's a known Sasquatch hair coming as it did from Fox's own head.
Yeah.
A moment of silence for Fox.
Yes, he has passed. Sorry.
Yeah, he has passed. At least his remains are advancing science. I can't even
say remains are somewhere in Janice Carter's cerebellum.
You know, it's worth noting that one of the claims that was floating around out there in the internet right before this dropped was that Fox had actually given a sample of his hair apparently on video to these people, that it was just absolutely, you know, impeccable. You know, it's everything you could want. There he is, the living Bigfoot on video, giving his hair to these people. They're collecting it. I'm assuming putting it in a bag, sealing it on tape and all of this, but that's not actually in the table of samples submitted. There's just the one where he used the pillow in the basement.
That'd be pretty good evidence, wouldn't it?
That would be awesome. Yeah,
the video might help. Might be what you'd call corroborating evidence.
Well, that gets back to the chain of evidence issue, which you reached out to somebody, Sam.
Yes, I did. Being that we pride ourselves on investigative journalism here at the Bigfoot Show, I took it upon myself and I emailed. There's a section in the paper of labs that were used for hire. And so I emailed all of them, with the exception of one. There was one I couldn't get any contact info for. But I emailed all of them. So far, I've only gotten responses from two. The very nice lady at the University of Southern California had no idea what I was talking about. So I sent her some amplifying information. I still haven't heard back from her. The one positive response that I got back, and before I read the response, I want to read something. I want to read something directly from the paper. Where does it say? Okay. Under the collection and classification of hominid samples, there is a sentence that reads, they were treated as forensic samples and cataloged to maintain an appropriate chain of custody. So I got this nice email back from, and I'm not going to use her name because I don't want her to be pestered by a bunch of Bigfoot crazy people. But I got this nice email back from Family Tree DNA, and it reads, "Thank you for your email. To answer your question, yes, we did process mtDNA samples for Dr. Ketchum. Information about the test can be found at our website. We ran either the mtDNA plus or MT full sequence. I cannot comment on anything else. Our lab simply analyzed DNA samples that were sent to us." In big, this should be in like 24 font bold. there was no chain of custody for any of the samples, so I cannot verify any information regarding their origin, how they were obtained, or how they were processed before we received them.
Bingo.
Period. Yeah. So,
so we hear a guy, a Sasquatch named Fox, left one on a pillow for us.
Well, and this, here's what's really especially frustrating about that is, as many people have pointed out about Ketchum, these are forensic DNA people, right? I mean, this is their forensics is their background.
Yeah.
And as our resident actual forensic expert pointed out, Paul, to us separately from the show, if you do not have chain of custody, you do not have evidence.
You have nothing.
You've got zero. You've got donut. So, I don't understand why anybody's giving her. Here's another case where she says one thing in her paper, and independently, we have determined that it's a lie.
Mm-hmm.
So, what do you do with that? Do you keep saying, well, I sure hope there's something in there? No, there's not anything in there. She's a liar, and she's charged you $30 to lie to your face.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, take that and do with it what you want, I guess. You can still think.
I think you might be in love with Melbourne.
I'm seriously in love. You know what? it isn't so much Melba. It's this. This would have been bad enough, but then it's the next thing we're going to talk about, which is the Matilda bullshit. And then on top of that, Rick Dyer. I mean, as I am just like, if I was not where I am in this, you know, quote unquote field, right? If I didn't know the people that I know and I wasn't doing what I was doing, I would just throw up my hands and walk away from the entire asylum of freaks and weirdos that populate this thing. It is like all of a sudden.
Dyer's definitely in the Dyer and Discard. I mean, Dyer's just.
It's some kind of like weird convergence where all these things happened like literally in the same week. And it's like, what the hell is wrong with us?
And if you're.
It's Finding Bigfoot, dude.
No, it's not. Finding Bigfoot is awesome compared to all this stuff. Finding Bigfoot is.
At least it's entertaining.
Seriously.
Well, what I mean is that the popularity of Bigfoot, I think, part of it.
So you're saying, you know, that's what's driving
on the gravy train.
Right.
It's like, whoa,
right.
Bigfoot's bigger. You know, now we got to get our shit out. You know, whatever it is. Okay, and they make that noise when they do that. But you know, Dyer is just obviously.
We're gonna get to Dyer. I want to save Dyer to last. So let's just. Let's sort of close out Melba Ketchum for this episode, as we've done in the past. And I think, you know, relatively speaking, we've been pretty accurate when we've made our projections. Where does this go? What happens now with this Melba Ketchum crap?
I think it'll fade because it's not there. You know, it isn't there. You've got nobody apart from her and her circle, people close to her, is backing up what she says. Using the scientific process. I think you will continue to have followers for a bit. There could be, possibly, you know, other people come out and make statements again saying, look, it's not that we're saying there wasn't some, maybe there was a Bigfoot hair in there, but the methodology was bad. So hopefully what this does through debating it like this is people becoming better aware of this proper scientific method to, you know, look, people got to verify. You make a claim, okay, then person A, B, C, and D, scientists, if they all back it up, hey, you probably got some truth there. So maybe those people get a little better educated. Who knows? Maybe not Mel, but at least hopefully somebody gets a better understanding of how it actually works. But I don't, if you're going to ask like a year from now, I don't think we're going to be hearing much from Melba. Unless there's another attempt. But I don't know. I just don't see her sticking around too long. I think it's so laughably bad in so many ways. Charging the money, misspellings, the several DNA specialists coming out and saying, nope, sorry, it's not meeting the standards that, you know, I think she's going to hang herself. No, that's terrible.
What do you think, Sam?
I think it's going to be like a Bush League Roswell incident. I think that initially you're going to see true scientists, real scientists who are going to keep coming out and they're going to keep dogpiling on this thing and just, you know, beating it down and pointing out all the problems with it. And initially, that is going to sway some fence sitters and some people who are, you know, only marginally in the camp of Ketchum back over to reality, and they're going to realize that it's nothing but a bunch of hokum. But I believe that there will always be a core group of creduloids who, no matter what you tell them, no matter what you show them, no matter how credentialed you are and how qualified you are to point out the fact that this is a bunch of BS, they will always be there apologizing for her and standing up for her and saying that, you know, that this is just scientific bias and that science just doesn't want to admit that she's so awesome.
Yeah.
And no matter what you do, they're always going to hold on to that belief. I mean, there's still people that support Janice Carter. There's still people who support Mary Greene, and those stories have just been shredded. So, you know, if there's people still holding on to that, then there's people still going to hold on to this.
I actually think that if she continues to push this, if she continues, and she may, I mean, I hope, Scott, I hope you're right. I hope it all just fades away and it becomes just a little pimple butt footnote on the history of all this crap. But if she continues to push, if she continues to find new ways to monetize her research, quote unquote, my fear is that she's actually going to end up doing the opposite of what she says she wants to do, right? She says, you know, if you look at the Sasquatch Genome Project, Bigfoot are people, right? So they shouldn't be hunted. And this, I don't want to get into a conversation about kill, no kill, but her position is they should not be hunted. There should not be a specimen taken because they're people. And here's the evidence that proves it. But my fear is that her continued like hammering on the DNA thing and her complete lack of credibility and just the disrespect she brings to the entire field of research of DNA in the field of Bigfoot research will, in essence, drive away any interest by serious scientists in doing any kind of DNA research, even if you have good DNA, even if you can establish the provenance, the chain of custody of your sample. Even if she continues, my fear is that it will drive people like De Sattel into saying, you know what, it's just not worth it. I'm not going to get involved in this crap. It is a joke. It is what's happened in so much of what we do.
I think I would agree if it's somebody who you would know was associated with Melba Ketchum. I don't think a blanket disdain for DNA evidence will happen. If Joe Blow out of nowhere says, hey, you know, I've done this and blah, blah, and I think that's just still going to look at stuff. I think he thinks that the field is
But
is
that's what we're saying
enough.
Right now. Let's pretend we're a year from now and Ketchum has come out with two or three new and exciting ways for you to part for you from your money. And explain to you, then.
But I think she. This is so big right now. The amount of bullshit. Nobody's going to really take it seriously. They won't take her seriously. I don't think it's not. They're not going to take DNA potential seriously. I think people who would be directly associated with her. I disagree with that. I think it just depends. For example, if you had somebody, let's say from an established university or something, who was doing some serious DNA attempting for getting Sasquatch stuff, for example, or because all you have to do is look at Ketchum's background a little bit, and you're kind of it's sketchy real quick with the Better Business Bureau F ratings, the all that stuff. But if a person comes and their background, hey, this guy seems pretty legit, or he or she seems pretty legit. They're still going to look at that stuff.
My point is there are already few enough people in the field of DNA research who will touch quote-unquote Bigfoot DNA. There aren't that many. You know, and there aren't a lot of guys like De Sattel who will say, sure, I'll take a look at it. And I know this because of my personal experience with some of these things. There aren't that many people who will do it. A lot of people will just dismiss it out of hand. They'll either say, no, I'm not going to touch that because I don't want it. Like, that's just a bunch of crap. Or they'll pay you lip service and they'll basically tell you your sample was no good. I mean, there already is not a huge bunch of guys who can do this work who will do it for you. So by continuing to do this, she's not helping get any more people in this field. In fact, I think she's probably driving people away to say that I won't work with Bigfoot because Bigfoot is a joke, because people like, you know, Ketchum and those who follow her are a joke. So that's a risk.
Yeah. I would say this, though. You know, you would, I don't see Disattel going away, just using it as an example. And frankly, when it comes to evidence like this, you only need one guy. One, because if a sample or samples were delivered, proper chain of evidence shows an unknown primate, you only need the one. He locks that into the gen bank, sees the connection, and then immediately shares it. Then it's like, hey, Todd Disattel says this. Now other scientists will come in and look. So you don't. It's not like you don't need 50, 100 different geneticists actively searching or taking samples. You can have just a few, you know. So I don't think it really will. I mean, I think people with half a brain, when they see someone like Ketchum, and they look, they know it. Okay, yeah.
She's covered in people with half a brain right now. So anyway, we'll see.
Yeah. Half a brain are going to be probably those folks anyway who are going to be, as far as perhaps presenting DNA samples or potentially valid DNA samples. I don't see it closing the general mind again, because it only takes one. It only takes one scientist to verify that, and then they look at it, and then the other scientists look at the evidence, and if they find that it's legit,
if you've got one left, then you've got to find that one, right? All I'm saying is, when this show's over, I'm checking all
one
my downspouts.
One scientist or one Sasquatch.
I'm checking all my downspouts. Scientists. You got to find that one guy.
Yeah.
You got to find the guy who will do it. So anyway, that's enough of Ketchum.
Yeah. It's interesting, though. That is an interesting speculation. It'll be fine. People will still look. Let's go to club.
So part of the Ketchum paper, this was presented in a way to give some credence to the Erickson project if there's anything that has a more mythic state in the world of Bigfoot research, it is this Erickson footage, right? This footage of Bigfoot that I know people who know people who have seen it. I don't think I know anybody who has seen it directly or have spoken to them. Actually, I do know them, but anyway, it's supposed to be some of the best footage ever. It's supposed to show like close-ups of faces and blah, blah, blah. And it's really going to be this thing that blows the lid off of Sasquatch research. But there's been, it's sort of been in the undercurrent. There's been, you know, excuse after excuse as to why this stuff has never been presented. And to sort of like bolster the Erickson project within the Ketchum report, she has a 19-second clip of somebody talking about some of the footage.
Yeah.
And you see very briefly footage of what they claim to be a sleeping Sasquatch who was breathing 6 times a minute, which is a very... So this is a sleeping Sasquatch. This is the Bigfoot known as Matilda. I love it when they get cute little names like that. But so this is Matilda, and she's napping on the side of a hill. She's right out in the open, whatever. And so they show a very brief clip of her napping. And you know, I am ultimately an optimist deep down inside. So when I hear about this Erickson footage, even though, you know, there's a lot of red flags and warning bells, when I hear about it, I want it to be real. This is exactly what I said about Ketchum, you know, a year ago.
Yeah.
I want there to be something there, right? But apparently Matilda is a rug. I don't know. Did you guys see it? I posted it to the Facebook page.
Yeah, I saw the little clip. It just looks completely like matted fake fur, and it just seems like that whole project is horseshit. Element of horseshit.
Sam, you've been around probably animals more than I have. Does that hair, could it be, are we just like looking at it and dismissing it out of hand and saying, no, that's a rug? Could there be something there that we're just not seeing because we're from the city and we don't know stuff like that? Or what do you think?
Oh, you're going to call him a country boy bona fides here.
I see
how it is. Hang on. I'm actually trying to like watch the clip while you guys are talking. I've seen it before, but it could be. I've seen enough normal animals under abnormal circumstances to know that you know, things can be deceiving. There's a couple of things that I would point out right off the bat. One is, and I don't know if someone else can confirm this or not. One of the listeners, I saw this written somewhere, and I haven't had a chance to confirm it. But the guy said that the respiratory rate is 6 breaths per minute.
Right.
Which, if you think about it, that's pretty slow. Someone pointed out that was comparable to like a whale, which I don't know. It seems really slow to me. And it also doesn't seem, if you watch it, it's a big inhale. It's almost like someone is pumping air into a bladder and then letting it out. It doesn't look
right.
Natural to me.
Right, I agree.
And another thing, two more things. One,
you know,
where the hell is all the good video?
Like shag carpet will actually breathe at that rate.
I mean, you know, when this was all being talked up back before the paper dropped,
right?
There was supposed to be all this amazing video, and it was going to come out in conjunction with the paper, and it was going to come out to support the paper, and the paper was going to be there to support the video, and we were finally going to get to see it. And what we get is, like you said, it's a 19-second clip of a monitor with a guy talking over it,
right,
with a big copyright over it, of a big hairy mess laying in some leaves, breathing very deeply and very slowly. So, I mean, really, where is all of this amazing footage?
And it does, to your point, look like somebody just, like, pumped a bladder full of air and then let it out.
But the thing that I thought was the funniest, and actually I had to comment about this when I saw it on the forum, when the paper first came out, you know, we ran this video on the Bigfoot Show's Facebook page.
Yep.
And apparently there were a lot of ruffled feathers in the Ketchum camp, and she actually came out with this warning and said that if anyone posts an unauthorized copy of the video again, that there was going to be, you know, consequences and
hell to pay.
Right. But if you did it again, as if the video had been pirated and put up on YouTube without their authorization,
right,
and against their wishes, and made it look like someone had nefariously taken this video without their consent and put it out there for the public. This is very important to notice. When you view the paper on the internet, this video is embedded in that paper.
Yeah.
The video that was made public was that same video.
Right.
To the extent that when they realized what they had done and made the video private, when you went back and viewed the paper and saw the embedded video, it was listed as private.
Right.
So what?
Go ahead.
I mean, no, what they did was they put the video, they embedded the video in the paper, didn't take the time to realize that anybody on YouTube was going to be able to see this thing once it came out.
Mm-hmm.
And then once they realized their mistake, instead of just owning up and correcting the mistake, like the All Rights Preserved, which is still at the bottom of the website, they come out with this.
Well, they're preserved
bullshit.
For all time, Sam. Come on.
They come out with this bullshit cover story lie to make it look like someone did this against their wishes. How hard would it be? I mean, how disingenuous are you? How untruthful and untrustworthy are you if you can't even come out and say, wow, we didn't mean for
we
the general
up.
Public to
right.
be able to see this right. video, so we have made it private.
Because
no, you've got to make it look like somebody else did it.
Here's the thing. After I paid my $30 to see this paper, she posted on Facebook, also included in here is this, you know, long-awaited Erickson video, right? You'd be able to see a piece of the... She basically used it as a promotion point, right? So I'm like, oh, shit,
yeah.
I should go look at this, right? Because I hadn't looked at the paper yet. I bought it, but I hadn't looked at it yet, or I hadn't looked at it very hard. So I went in there, and, like, there it was. And I'm like, wow, this is the Erickson video, and boy, does it not look great, right? And then I realized that there's a YouTube logo in the bottom right-hand corner. So I clicked on the YouTube logo, and as it normally does, now again, there's ways to do this so that it doesn't work like this, but it's amateur hour over there at the Ketchum Camp, so they don't know what they're doing. I clicked on this thing. I go to a YouTube page, And there's the share links right there. You can copy the URL. Yeah, I can share this freaking thing to Facebook, right? So I'm like, before anybody figures out what they did, I'm going to share this thing to Facebook. And I stuck it on our Facebook page. And all of a sudden, I saw her saying the same things. Like, you know, they were talking about Sean Evidence, right? The guy from the Evidence blog. He better not be putting that out there. Like, nobody put it out there. We just copied your link and stuck it on the internet in the way that the internet was meant to work, right? I mean, that's how it's supposed to work. And nobody pirated anything. Nobody did anything illegal because the share links, can I point out there was a Facebook, a Google Plus, a Twitter, all those little share links were sitting on the video. You can control how your video works on YouTube. You can make it so that exactly what happened did not happen. But if you don't know how to change the misspelling in the footer of your website from all rights preserved to all rights reserved, you probably don't know how to embed a video so that people can't share it all over the internet. So, but this is the thing.
I'm sorry. I was going to say, can we hack in and change all and add to all rights preserved and then in parentheses in alcohol right afterwards?
I think it's like strawberry preserve. That's where I went.
Okay, sorry.
But again, I think that even though we've put a fork in the Ketchum story, the use of this video as a promotion element and then her being upset that it couldn't be used that way anymore. And really, the only reason I posted it to our Facebook wall is because she purposely used it as a way to sell more papers. Right. But there was no reason to do that. So anyway, it's. The way she used it is slimy and con artisty. Right. And is scammy. And just further supports the fact that she's not real. And the video itself is just massively disappointing. I hear you, Sam. I'm going to say that personally, my own feeling is there's a small percentage chance this could be real. Very small. But
that's certainly a good scientific attitude. You can't conclusively rule it out. But
we got to see the whole thing. I mean, and again, supposedly there's like close-ups of their face. You can see what color their tongues are. I mean, I've heard all of this remark. You can see. You can actually, in one point, you can make out what their Facebook password is the way they type it in because they get that on video.
That's what I'm saying. Where is that at?
Where is it?
All of this earth-shattering, just ground shaking video at.
Well, she says that's up to Erickson to release, and he has decided not to release it as of this point. So it continues to be mythical. I mean, at this point, wasn't it filmed like in 1972? I mean, I feel like it's been out there for
what?
This video was created years ago.
Mm-hmm. By the way, okay, I'll just say this: if Bob Hieronymus comes out and says he's in that suit, it will lower my percentage of that I think the PGF is fake, just a little bit, but just throw that out.
Okay, so Erickson footage not looking good. I guess we'll see when.
Yeah, dude.
When the DVD is released,
that reeks of scamming.
Right. And by the way, I will have to pay another $30 to see the Erickson video. I am quite convinced when it comes out, it will be for sale. It's not going to be.
You'll have to click on the download link, even though it's being shared on YouTube.
Exactly. They'll take my money and then they'll send me to a public YouTube page.
But wait a minute. You guys are saying they changed it to private, though. Now,
no,
right?
Well, they did, and then they realized that if they change it to private, you can't see it in the paper either because they don't know how YouTube works.
Oh, they couldn't. There's no way to set that up.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
You can do things like that with YouTube, but they don't know how to do it.
They're new to the interwebs,
and I'm not going to help them. So now it's publicly.
Well, that was the ultimate. To me, that was the funniest thing about it all. When they realized that they couldn't figure out how to do it so that you could see it in the paper but not see it, publicly on YouTube, then they just made it public again and acted like, oh, well, here, we're just going to be generous and let everybody see it anyway.
Right.
So,
maybe
they just threw their hands up and gave up.
If you can't figure out how to do that, maybe your DNA analysis might not be top-notch.
I'm just going to say, I'm guessing that what she calls next generation sequencing equipment is probably a little more complicated than YouTube. Maybe.
Even that terminology, one of the posts that I saw on the Bigfoot forums from one of the users who's actually in the genetic field, what he was saying is what she keeps calling, what was it, next generation?
Next generation,
It's not. It's current. It's what everybody is doing.
because
the true next generation stuff isn't even in common practice. It's in beta testing, so to speak. So she's using a term
2 years ago
because
she's using a term for something, and it's not even applicable to the situation.
Because if you're a hypey scamster, one of the things you say is, "Oh, we are using next generation equipment," when in fact it's not. And because it's marketing, she's just marketing her paper, and marketing has no place in what she's doing. Unfortunately,
marketing and science are antithetical.
There's a different kind. I think there's
about a product or service. Correct.
There's a different
and science
yes.
is about the truth, regardless whatever that truth is.
But I think there is probably a certain element of marketing in legitimate science. It's not the kind of marketing you use to sell cereal, and that's the kind of marketing she's using. Hey, there's a secret surprise inside. You got the Ericsson video inside the box if you buy it, right? And oh, it's like it's next generation whole grain. You know, it's next generation DNA sequence. I mean, she's using the same marketing that I have to use every day in my job to sell science, and that's wrong, I think.
A Bob Gimlin nude calendar for 2013.
Check the centerfold. Right. So
he's 82?
Hard to believe. Look at those abs. So then there was finally, kind of unrelated to the whole Ketchum kerfuffle, there was Rick Dyer. So, Sam, could you – my head hurts right now. There was a guy. Yeah. What was the guy's name who said he saw the creature? So Rick Dyer, here's just a little background for people who don't live and breathe this crap. Rick Dyer is the guy who says he took a video of one out of his tent. He said he saw it walking by his tent, right? Well, now it turns out, and we talked about that a while back, and we kind of dismissed it because it was Rick Dyer. And Rick Dyer, by the way, is also the guy who was behind the Georgia Bigfoot hoax where he said they had a dead one in the freezer and it turned out to be a costume. And he's a complete scammer and a liar and not anyone should believe. But apparently he's still, quote-unquote, in the field trying to clear his name. So now he's in a tent. And he videotapes a Bigfoot walking by his tent. And this video comes out a little while back, and people were like, wow, that's interesting, because it's a better costume this time. But it's Rick Dyer, so we don't believe him. Then it comes out that there was a BBC film, not a BBC film crew, a British film crew, wasn't BBC. A British film crew was with him. The same film crew, by the way, who reached out to the TBRC and wanted they've been poking around the world of Bigfoot, wanting to do something around Bigfoot in the States. They're with him, and apparently what happens is he jumps out of his tent in his underwear and he shoots this thing in the back of the head and it drops dead, right? So, and apparently this is the story that these film guys were there when he killed this Bigfoot. And he takes it, and now it's in Vegas, right? That's what I understand. It's somewhere in Vegas, somewhere around Vegas. And this dude, he's nightly, you know, in the velvet room. No, okay. So what's the dude's name who says he saw it?
Muskie Allen.
Muskie Allen sounds perfectly legitimate to me.
Muskie Allen.
Yeah.
So this Muskie Allen guy gets, and this is where the Facebook Find Bigfoot people, this whole thing just is a fascinating little. So these guys interview this Muskie Allen dude, and he gives them a long interview about it where he says things that are just kind of nuts, if you ask me. And the way he talks about things, it's like, again, he's trying to sell how authentic and realistic looking this thing is. If it's a dead animal, you don't need to go on and on about the incredible detail of the face, right? I mean, it's if it's a dead animal, you don't need to do that. But anyway, so he does this thing. And so put a pin in all that. The problem here, from my perspective, is that there's a known Bigfoot costume commercially available that has been used in multiple things, commercials, movies. We've got examples of it on our Facebook page. That looks exactly like the thing that is videotaped through his tiny little window in his tent. So to me, I mean, come on, we're done, right? We don't have to talk about this anymore, right? Because Rick Dyer's a liar. He's already a lying hoaxer.
Exactly.
Dude's already done this once. This is just like version 2.0. He went back and said, well, what did we do wrong? Well, our suit was cheap. We need a better suit, so we're going to spend more money on a suit. We didn't have enough. I mean, come on. Why are we?
What just amazes me,
Brian,
is,
I think you're the only person taking this seriously.
I
am not. Again,
that's not true. I mean, obviously, newbies, retarded children, people missing half their brain might believe some of this. But, but it is good, I think, we're talking about this guy, because he is in that, I mean, he was a known associate of Biscardi, who was obviously a hoaxer.
Yeah.
Obviously. I mean, repeatedly. And Dyer is just of the same.
He's his protege. He's his protege.
But what about, okay, just a quick question on this. When you said that there was this British film crew with him, what has this film crew said about his claim? Has there been any, or is that, no one's been able to track them down?
I've seen a little bit about that. I've seen where a couple of people have tried to contact them. And unfortunately, they're taking the, I'm not going to say obtuseness, but they're taking the non-committal, no firm comment one way or the other from the film company as being confirmation that, oh my God, this actually did happen. And they just don't want to talk about it because they want to release this blockbuster film, blah, blah, blah. What just kills it for me is it's well documented in the public realm that after the 2008 hoax, after all that went down, Rick Dyer came out and said, I will do this again. I will pull off another big hoax. It will happen.
And yet, you idiots will buy it.
They're like, oh, well, this time it's different. But this is what I wonder. This is something that I've been thinking about, and I haven't mentioned it to anybody, but I want to put this out there to our fans, to use the crowdsourcing power of the Bigfoot Show's fan base. Facebook Finding Bigfoot came out post freezer hoax. Is that correct? I mean,
yes.
I'm not mistaken.
Oh, yes.
In
yes.
That.
I believe,
They've only
I believe
been around
true.
For what, a couple of years.
True. Yeah. I believe that's true.
A few years. Yeah.
Okay. Nobody really knows much about the people involved. It's just recently come out via Steve Culls that one of the leaders of Facebook Finding Bigfoot has been using an assumed name. The name that he uses online, it's not his real name. He's somebody else. What are the chances that Facebook Finding Bigfoot is actually part of Rick Dyer's hoaxing operation?
Okay, can That's... I hand raise? I would say actually, I think a low probability, and for this reason. Finding Bigfoot page is full of shit, whether it's intentional or they're moronic or whatever. It's just, here's where it verifies. We all know people have seen this. It's just a horribly conny or psychotic thing. But there is this element of the guy who does the main analyses has that, like you had said earlier in the show, so it has that air of scientificness about it. But when you really listen to what he says and what he's saying, it's complete. I can't tell if it's intentional or he's just crazy or whatever. Rick Dyer, in my opinion, is kind of a non-intellectual con man type guy. I don't see him behind that site at all or even connected to it. I just think it's just another...
But the thing is, allegedly... They're coming out. They are his biggest supporter.
Absolutely.
I mean, they're
all
making
over this
no
thing.
Bones about the fact
that.
Oh,
wait, hold on.
Real,
let me change my opinion.
That
well,
he has a body.
Maybe, how about
and
this? Maybe they're both scant. Maybe didn't originate together, but they've joined forces of evil together at some point because they're both scanty, right?
Right.
And they've gone, hey, you're a dick. I'm a dick. Why don't we just be dicks together? So that I could buy, especially with what you just said.
Yeah, I've even read rumors that supposedly that the Facebook Find Bigfoot guys have gone to Vegas and viewed the body. So, another thing that occurred to me, honestly, I think he has a body. I think he has a Minnesota Iceman. I think he has Jimmy Hanover, a gas. I think he has a body.
A fake body.
Yeah.
Yeah, in the technical sense of the word, is it biological? No.
Right.
And if it is, it's sewn together from a bunch of other parts.
I think that's the likely scenario. Yeah, that he's created a sideshow piece that is believable enough that people are going for it. And I think he used at the core potentially I don't know because I haven't been invited to see it, but potentially this commercially available Bigfoot suit that is just better than his last monkey suit. I mean, his last one was like a $50 gorilla suit, right?
And I'll give him credit. I mean, he understands this community well enough to realize that if he can draw in or pull the wool over the eyes of someone who is generally well-respected, that people will, for whatever reason, turn off their common sense and turn off their ability to make good decisions and follow along simply because of that person signing off on it. So, you know, if you have, like, I've seen that Derek Randles has been invited down. And, you know, let's say Derek goes down and he gets suckered into it and falls for it. People who respect Derek and people who take Derek's word at face value are now going to believe it just because, you know, just because he said so. And Rick Dyer understands that. And I think that's what he's playing off of.
Right.
You know, I want to say this, what thought that occurred to me about 20 minutes ago in this discussion with Ketchum to a degree, but definitely with Dyer. And maybe even these Finding Bigfoot guys. I would hope, as Sam kind of did, a little call out to the Bigfoot Show folks. If we have any law enforcement undercover guys out there, because I would think that there are elements here that would qualify as fraud, right? Because isn't there money being taken by these guys?
I don't think there's been any money change hands yet that I'm aware of. But, I mean, you're free to lie. But if there was money changing hands, then yeah, that would be fraud, sure.
Exactly. I mean, and again, if what you're, you know, your speculation on if what Ketchum's doing is intentional, like she knows it's not that, but she's, you know, is she saying? Well, she is. She's saying, here, my paper has proof that Bigfoot, and but here's $30, and you can see it.
Right.
Would that qualify as fraud if, in fact, she knows it doesn't meet those standards?
Right. I don't know. That's a good question.
You have to
prove that she knows that it doesn't, and I think that might be kind of hard to do.
I know, because there's enough doubt that that's just a little cuckoo. That's what's interesting about the whole thing. But
the most interesting part about going back to call, and you know, this idea that maybe Facebook Find Bigfoot is a Rick Dyer production from the get go is interesting. I think that would be a super long con. I mean, that would be sort of just really dramatically impressive if that's the case.
I don't think he's got the. He doesn't seem to be too much of a mental.
What's interesting is Steve Coles was so just sort of bothered by the fact that Facebook Find Bigfoot would basically sell Dyer's claims for him to such an extent that I can understand where Sam comes from, where he thinks that they're in cahoots, because I mean they are really getting hard behind this thing. That he basically outed the dude. What's interesting is when he outed him, it was a name that I recognized. This guy lives in Minneapolis.
Gay?
No, he's gay.
Oh.
No, outed him in that he basically publicly identified him, right? He's a well-known person in the Twin Cities, which is in Minneapolis, St. Paul, which was
Cole.
Really surprising. No, not Coles, the guy that he outed behind Facebook Find Bigfoot. It was surprising to me because I've had a couple of conversations with him a long time ago via Facebook, and he said, you know, we wanted to get together, whatever, it never happened, and that's fine by me. But what's interesting is I went back to Coles' page just now, and he's redacted all of that information. And he's got quite a few blog posts after the fact that I haven't read yet. But it's interesting that this dude was publicly identified, and now he's been unidentified.
Well, now that's really interesting, because when that first came out, there was a big issue because Christopher Knoll, who's another researcher up in Coles' area, called Coles out and said, you don't need to be outing this guy, and you need to lie and say that you had it wrong,
right.
Or you got the wrong guy.
He still got
to
that
the extent that Steve actually went onto his Facebook page and posted the conversation between himself and Knoll, where Knoll was asking him to lie about the guy's identity. And now you're saying he's gone back and redacted it and removed the guy's identity?
Yeah, he did. He's removed it from the graphic. And I actually copied that graphic off his page when I saw it, and now there's a different version there that has the guy's name marked out. But he's left the exchange between he and Christopher Knoll where he says, are you asking me to lie, Chris? Question mark, question mark, question mark. And Chris Knoll says, yes, in order to correct your immoral deed. So the immoral deed was outing this guy, right?
Why, which most people regard as an immoral deed, to fight your immoral
deed. So you need to. And the reason he outed this guy is because, of course, Rick Dyer is a fraud. He's a con man. And so what he's outing is saying, like, Facebook Find Bigfoot is selling this thing hard. And so, therefore, you should know who's behind Facebook Find Bigfoot. I'm not saying that I would have done it. I'm not doing it right now, even though I know the guy's name. But I'm not going to say that I think that Steve was wrong. I think I totally understand where Steve was coming from. What was wrong was asking him to lie about it. And by the way, if you're going to create a big page like Facebook Find Bigfoot, and there are a whole lot of fans, and you're going to get out there, and you're going to push something, and your name gets out there eventually, that's just how the cookie goes, right? I mean, that's life right there. There's nothing you can do about that. If you're afraid of people knowing that you're into Bigfoot, then you should not be doing it publicly, period.
Exactly.
So anyway, the whole thing, it's just this tremendously fantastic drama that, you know, the Dyer is back with a new lie that people are actually buying because partly Facebook Find Bigfoot is behind it in a huge way, and they got this other lying musky dude who supposedly went and saw the thing, and I don't know, maybe he's lying, maybe he's not, he probably is.
And the Ketchum stuff and the Erickson fraud,
I've had it with you people. I've had it with all of you people.
It is pretty amazing. I can't recall how long we've done the show, but the concentration of bullshit it might be a sign of the apocalypse.
What partially pisses me off is if they could have just spread this out over a few weeks or a month or two, that could have given us multiple shows.
Could have gotten like three or four good shows out of this if they had the decency to do that.
Instead, it happens all in 1 week and we have to cover it all at once, and it makes my head hurt.
I feel dirty now. I'm showering as we speak.
I wouldn't be surprised. But in what? That's the question. So I don't know. That's where we are. We've got Melba Ketchum's thing turning into a total cluster. You've got the Erickson thing looking pretty sorry, and then you've got the Dyer / Facebook Finding Bigfoot Steve calls Christopher Knoll drama fest.
Yeah. Maybe the name of the show, Dyer Straits.
No, that's a good one. No. I already know what it is. What else? What else? I'm gonna do a plug of my own. This is plug time for Brian.
Cool.
The Texas Bigfoot Conference is coming up. If you live in the Dallas-Fort Worth area or within 50 miles of it, we've added Lyle Blackburn to the list, which is pretty cool. The guy that wrote he's a great guy. He presents well. It's fascinating stuff. I would encourage anyone who can to show up for the event. It's going to be fun.
And that's maybe the most beautiful wife in all of Squashdom. Just going to say that right there.
I'm just kind of creeped out now.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Lyle's. Have you ever listened to his band? Ghoul Town?
Yeah, they're great.
Yeah.
I don't know that he's doing as much with them as he used to. I know they used to tour and record, but you know, they had a baby and everything, and he's writing his book. I don't know if they're as active as they used to be. Did you ever meet Lyle, Sam?
No.
Sam's still awake?
Just the one interview that we did with him for the show.
He's a good guy.
Yeah. Good guy.
So anyway, come down to the Fort Worth Convention Center. It'll be fun. We need your money.
Cool. What kind of attendance are you anticipating?
I don't know. You know, if you look at the past couple of shows that we've done, I call them shows anyway. You're talking a couple hundred people. It used to be there was a time where it was attendance was quite high, but over the years, ironically, as the interest in the field got higher, for some reason, I don't know that these shows do as well as they used to. Just relatively speaking. So
what you need to do is advertise that Bobo is going to be there, and you just find another guy named Bobo, and then you know they can't. You don't put a photo of the known Bobo.
No, I just do like just some come meet Bobo.
Bobo.
Come meet Bobo. Yeah. Some smelly dude in the corner. I'll sign you an autograph.
Yeah, look, I can write like him. I can. Yeah.
$5. I'll give you an autograph for $5. Are you going to finish that? All right. What else can we do? Have anything else to talk about?
What I'm looking, where is the when you put the call out for topics? I'm looking on the Bigfoot show page.
Oh yeah, a lot of people. That's a good reminder. A lot of people wanted me to talk about X some more. And I'll say, oh, by the way, there's going to be like an hour and a half long presentation about Area X at the Texas Bigfoot Conference. So I don't know. You might want to come if you want to hear more about
it. Now,
X.
Do people get in free with a handgun? I'm just.
I from what I understand, there are no sidearms allowed in the Fort Worth Convention Center. I may be wrong about that. It's Texas. You can take
bring your own bazooka. You're in free.
I think surface to air missile launcher. You have to go large or go home.
What the hell is that list? Gosh darn it! I can't find it anymore.
I don't think any, but there was nothing really there. It was Ketchum and Dyer and Matilda and
Wait,
Area X. That's what
somebody
people
had there. I thought there was one other, some interesting speculation about something that.
Oh, no, you're right. You're right. There was. Hold on. I'm looking at it right now.
Where on the page? I'm going down. Oh, there it is. Damn. Sorry.
You're talking about David Mitz?
The end.
Do, 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 do. You're talking about Adam Douglas?
The guy that talked about
seeing hairy creatures and in places where they can't possibly be.
Yeah, like ghosts of big feet.
Yeah.
That would be weird if you never saw a ghost of a Bigfoot. That would double whammy.
So Adam Douglas, not to be confused with Douglas Adams, entirely different person. Adam Douglas says on Facebook, I know that this sort of stuff always gets filed away as, quote, crazy, but one, in all kinds of places, he says one, in parentheses, like he's making his first point, in all kinds of places, including the UK, where there is very little wild nature, many people see big, hairy, man-like creatures in the woods. I personally don't believe all these people are mistaken or lying, and I guess none of you do either. Two, there is no physical proof that these creatures actually exist. Not only has nobody found convincing evidence of a Bigfoot in the USA, which I don't agree with, nobody has found evidence of any kind of an ape at all in North America ever, which I don't agree with. Three, though I'm not a scientist, my understanding is that it is not really credible that a creature as big as Bigfoot is reported to walk totally upright, as all apes tend to walk hunched over on all fours. He's got a problem with that too. So I don't want to ask exactly, quote, is Bigfoot a ghost, unquote, or, quote, is Bigfoot some teleported around abound by aliens, unquote, or even, quote, is Bigfoot some kind of spirit or essence that has the ability to appear as we expect it, unquote, because there's a lot of evidence that this guy's wordy, that any of these things are true, but he says, at what point do you say, one, a lot of people see this, including people I trust, but yet, two, there is hardly any physical evidence that there isn't a great, no good picks, no dead bodies, no bones, no fossils, none, no one never has strayed into a populated place and been recorded. So there, blah, 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 blah. So I'm just going to say, I think that your premise is all wrong, Adam. I just think that your premise is wrong. You're saying that there's no physical proof. There's all kinds of physical proof. There's footprints. You can choose to ignore them or not.
It's
physical evidence. Fine. Yes, I agree with you. Physical evidence. Yeah.
So, well, he said convincing evidence. You think that it's more that.
Well, it's just how convincing.
This
gets into how
circumstantial evidence. So I would agree with him. There's no convincing, conclusive evidence of their existence.
But he's saying,
other than someone seeing it directly. But as far as scientifically, there's we wouldn't be doing a show if there was conclusive.
But the core of his question gets to the value of what physical evidence exists, such as footprints. So people find footprints. They find footprints that are not easily explained how they could be created. They're found in places where it makes no sense for people to have made them there. You've got a story just like that, Scott.
You dropped out there, dude. Sorry, what was that, the last?
You had a picture of a footprint made under similar circumstances.
Oh, yeah. Oh, the guy, the Monty Dodge print from 1977.
Yeah.
That I find pretty damn interesting. I wouldn't call it proof, but I find it...
it's evidence.
Yeah, it happened. So, I know the guy, and footprints, I think, to make a reasonable person go, I wouldn't be surprised if an easy majority of prints that have been photographed are fake, because I think the majority of the ones I've seen are probably fake. But there are those ones like Monty's, a few other ones that maybe, coupled with the sheer volume of sightings in the last 200 years, Native American legends.
And I think there are some good pictures. I think that
20 years ago that lead me to believe that in all probability these things are real.
Coupled
with that, there's a lot of horse shit. So that's what makes it tough.
Well, sure there is. And a lot of the photographs you see, like the one, there's an Ivan Marks photo that gets republished every time a story comes up. That's totally crap. But I think that there are some good photos out there. Not a lot, but some. This idea that they only walk around on 2 feet is not true. I think that they will walk up on 2 feet or 4 feet. And I think that there are reports that indicate that. And anyway, my own personal experience tells me that. So I think that your premise is that there's literally nothing to this except the sightings, which is a common misperception, I find, from people who don't know about all the things that are out there. So but that also the point that people see hairy creatures or report seeing hairy creatures in places like the UK where they could not be, is not a bad one. The thing is, you don't get a lot of reports of hairy creatures in places where they could not be. I don't know of any of them in Hawaii, for example. I think that this idea that they are reported in the UK, but how many? I mean, are we talking about, you know, a handful, or are there hundreds? Because in Northern California, Oregon, and Washington, we're probably in the thousands of reported cases. Yeah. And it's not true that all of them are true. Not all of them are actual. Some of them are misidentification. Some of them are lies. Some of them are people being hoaxed. But we're talking literally thousands. And there are not literally thousands of encounter reports coming out of places like the UK. So,
well, you have to...
Go ahead, Sam.
I was going to say, in relation to his thing, kind of the ghost of Bigfoot stuff, I mean, you might be kind of, alluding to the mythological dimension of Bigfoot, or is it something kind of a genetic memory that maybe we have, that these things did exist at one time, and our ancestors knew about them, and then stories through lineage, and maybe even a genetic basis, so that when you're out in the forest, and I think there is some truth to this theory, not fully, because just like Brian said, it's a mixture of everything. It's bullshit. It's misperception. But I would think a percentage of misperceived sightings or reports could tie into something like that. That in our consciousness, this notion of a man-like hairy being having mythological, like I mentioned, a mythological dimension to it, and actually maybe a basis in something like Giganto that our relatives had contact with, could at some point, if someone's out alone in the forest, could result in a false sighting. It could be a contributing factor to that, coupled with how many Bigfoot movies they've seen and how many times they've heard, or how much they're into Bigfoot.
Yeah.
So it's literally a case-by-case thing. You just have to look at it. But at the end, yes, it's just a story. It's not conclusive. For me personally, as I mentioned, it's the sheer volume of these sightings that makes it impressive, coupled with what happened to me, that leads me to bet, as it were.
I think that's
it is true.
The thing that is lacking for a lot of people, because you just said it, it's coupled with what happened to me. I think there are people like the three of us, actually, who were into this probably prior to any personal experience. That's not always the case. A lot of people come into it with a personal experience, but we were into it anyway. And this gets to a question, a comment that David Mitz had. I hope I'm saying his last name right. So I don't know how else I'd say it. It's three letters, M-I-Z, Mitz. He's saying, basically, the point of his comment, at what point does the amount of time and effort being put into finding the proof without producing any acceptable results that meet the standards of legitimate scientific community actually become kind of disproof? The problem is, A, people keep seeing them. B, the people who are looking for the proof oftentimes have seen them, not always, or believe that they've experienced them in some way. You can't disprove Bigfoot.
A negative.
Right. You can't disprove it. So, I mean, I guess the question, my answer to David is, well, never, because people will always keep looking for that thing that they think they saw, or people will always be intrigued. Sam, you wanted to say something a minute ago.
Yeah, I was going to post this link on our Facebook page. A lot of times people put out the weight of sightings as a strength for the case that Sasquatch is real. And sightings are a double-edged sword, and you have to take them at face value for what they are. And the last listener who was talking about the sightings in the UK and things like that, sightings where obviously you're not going to have the species running around, but still people are reporting it. Benjamin Radford, frequent punching bag of Bigfoot believers everywhere, has written a really interesting article about sightings of Christopher Dorner, the cop in California who went crazy and started killing people. And it really applies to this subject, because you can't look at a sighting as any kind of weight, because too often we have people who will make misidentifications. And that's one of the things that's listed in this article is, people, they didn't lie. They thought they saw this guy. It was just the wrong guy. It just happened to be somebody else and it kind of looked like him. So you're going to have people out in the woods and they're going to see something, and they're really going to see something. And to them, they interpret it as being a Sasquatch, but it's not. And then you're going to have people who are just going to lie. They're absolutely going to hoax it, and they're going to say, oh yeah, I saw him go into a Kentucky Fried Chicken in Tarzana. And, the next thing you got a SWAT team descending on it, and people are going to do with it with Sasquatch. They're going to say, oh yeah, I saw one stroll across the I-95, and they weren't even in the state when it happened. So when you look at sightings, you can't look at sightings as an up or a down, as a proof of evidence or a lack of it. From a proponent standpoint, you can't say that the number really contribute to anything, because you don't know how many or what percentage of those sightings is legitimate. And as a skeptic, you can't say, oh, well, you've got these sightings in the UK and you've got these sightings in these ridiculous places, because you can't assume that every sighting that's being, that's being submitted is exemplary of a real animal or a real sighting. If that makes any sense at all. But I'm going to put this link up on our Facebook page, and I strongly encourage all of our listeners to check it out.
Cool. I want to make one comment on that. I would say, it's like to say, what's the analogy? The cup of coffee, or whatever the hell it was. But the argument that more sightings doesn't mean more proof, or it doesn't. I would say this: if at this point in time, if there had only been four people in all of humanity had come forth and said they had seen something like this, we wouldn't be doing the show. We wouldn't be able to. But the fact that thousands and thousands and thousands of people—again, not proof—but I think viewing a sighting report as circumstantial evidence, which it is, and it's at the low end of the scale of evidence, is more of an impetus to search. And I think if you look in the history of the discovery of science, especially with higher primates, that you can see that it eventually did lead to it. So it's not proof, but it seems to me like, well, if the 20, 30 years from now, we still have people talking about this and people having sightings, it continues the probability that these things probably, if it does, disappear, either they did exist, they went extinct, or it was a complete, some kind of mental, societal thing that people got into.
Yeah. Well,
I think as far as an impetus, it's not yet. Yeah, if you have 1,000 sightings, it doesn't necessarily mean that the probability is higher that they exist, but In some sense, you know what I'm saying? It seems like, yeah. Wow, if you have that many people saying it.
Yeah, and that's the appeal of that for, from the proponent standpoint is you can say, oh, there's so many sightings. One of them has, one of them has to be real.
Yeah, well, it's like green.
They can't all be fake.
Thing. If just one is true.
Right, but all I'm saying is that when you weigh the totality of sightings, either as a proponent or as a skeptic, you have to be honest and you have to accept the fact that within that total number, there is an unknown percentage of hoaxes, misidentifications,
absolutely.
And false reports for whatever the impetus for them being false is. A certain percentage that you cannot determine is going to be false. So it should not come as a surprise if when you look at the data, you have these flyers out there that are they're just so far outside the norm that they make the whole thing look ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, all I can do is sort of speak from my own personal experience. When you have this, I mean, my interest in this subject was, well, my real sort of active interest in it as more than just something I watched on TV was started by a book about sightings. It was John Green's Sasquatch Files. And so it was nothing but sightings. And I think that that leads you down a path. Now, if you don't ever get any further than that, then I think it's really easy to end up where David Mitz suggests you might go. Like, well, if all I ever have is these sightings, but nothing ever comes of it, then how do I, what point do we just throw up our hands and walk away? And I think that a lot of people do. I think that's a perfectly reasonable outcome, right? To say that if all I ever hear is the same damn stories over and over again and nobody ever does anything, and then layered on top of that, you get like this craziness of Melba Ketchum and Rick Dyer and all these other idiots that populate and pollute the world, then I think that you can just get disgusted and leave. But what it might, where I went with it is I, for whatever reason and however I did it, I got more involved and I became associated with like-minded people. And then that led to me having what I believe to be a genuine encounter of and actually a couple of different types of encounters. And so even if I can't say for 100% certainty that everything that I've experienced is 100% Sasquatchy, right? I know that I'm close enough at this point that there is something more to this than just some sort of mass hallucination or mass, you know, whatever, this some sort of built-in genetic predisposition to see hairy guys in the woods. I know that there's more to it than that. And that's, I know that, right? But I can't make you know that, you being anybody hearing my voice, other than what I tell you. And then what I tell you just becomes yet another, you know, entry into the litany of sightings that I totally agree with Sam. There is an unknown percentage of that, which is crap. All I can say is that I don't think my percentage is crap. Whatever I've added to it, I believe to be perfectly authentic. But there is a problem with that, which, again, gets back to the point. This is why we're still looking, because if all we needed was sightings, we'd be done. You know, these would be in textbooks, and we wouldn't, you know, and this is what they do based on sightings. But that's not enough. And I think that everyone agrees. But I don't think that you can get to a point where if all we ever have is sightings, we can say that they don't exist, because the sightings keep happening. Something still happens. And I think this gets back to sort of where you come from on this stuff, Scott, is that there is some kind of phenomenon driving this. You know, even if you're going to go so far to say that there is no such thing as a physical animal like Bigfoot, there is something driving the fact that people keep seeing them. Somebody keeps making fake.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's no doubt. There's no doubt that there. What do we know conclusively? We know conclusively people have come forth and said they've seen these things. There have been imprints found in the ground, some of which we know for sure are hoaxes. And we have some footage of the Patterson film. I don't think it's real. I don't know if you guys know that. Anyway.
I'm not sure I know what you're talking about. Patterson what?
Yeah. And then all these other things. So that's, I mean, that is indisputable that these things, the Patterson film is real.
Right,
it exists. The reports are real, but does it correlate to an actual being? And in everything I've experienced talking to people who've allegedly had encounters, the thing that happened to me, I still leave a smidgen of doubt.
I consider myself a skeptical person. This was a conversation I got into on the Bigfoot forums regarding Area X and why don't we bring quote unquote skeptics into Area X? I'm a skeptical person. Everybody I know. Not everyone I know, but everybody who I will associate with in this field is also skeptical. The thing is, when I looked at this phenomenon of Bigfoot, my skepticism led me to wondering why the people on the other side, the people who think it's all a bunch of hokum, haven't come up with some grand unifying theory as to what is driving all of this. They dismiss things. They don't actually seem to weigh them. They just dismiss them. I had a conversation face-to-face with Radford in Pocatello, Idaho at a conference. And I said, well, what about, you know, specific sightings, right? Not sightings in general, which is what he kind of takes them as in general, saying that in general they are worthless. And I don't disagree with him. But specifically, some of them are damned difficult to explain, you know, to either write off as anything, right? There are a sort of a small collection of them that because of the people who reported them, because of the number of witnesses, perhaps, there are some really intriguing ones. And he just dismisses those too. That, well, they made it up, or they saw a bear, or whatever. And so the problem is, if you're going to be on the other side, and you're not going to ascribe to the idea that there is an animal behind all of this, you need to give me a unifying theory. And it can't be just that people are liars and that they see things and then some of them are fakers. There has to be something bigger to it than that, because people, thousands of people, keep seeing this stuff.
Yeah.
So what is it?
Well,
I
would disagree. I would actually disagree with you on that. I would say there is a theory. I mean, the general skeptical theory that comes back is no. What he would say is that he believes, and he doesn't know any more than I know or you know for sure. I mean, I'm pretty damn sure, and you're saying you're 100% sure. Although, from what I remember, your story was very compelling, I thought. But what I remember you telling me, you saw two black objects go up the hill, and then you saw a red eye glow in the thing.
Well, the nice thing is I get to decide what my percentage is more than you do.
And the other stuff too.
I'm done. I don't have any doubt. You have a small smidgen of doubt.
I was just going to say, it's still, I mean, from a purely scientific viewpoint, independent. And again, I don't want to get into the
But this is not the reason I'm saying these things is not because I think that it's proof of anything. What I'm saying is, if you have one side of people who say that the reason why there are footprints and sightings is because there's an animal, right? And people are seeing the animal, and the animal leaves footprints. On the other side, you have what? You have people are all liars. People all see things. People fake footprints. And the problem is, if you go just a little bit into the data, it's hard to support that after a while, because there are certain scenarios, certain encounters, certain things that have from either based on who said it or, again, the number of witnesses or whatever, they can't all just be dismissed as lying or misidentification or hoax victims. They can't all be dismissed so easily. So you need to have some sort of like grand unifying thing. What is causing this phenomenon? Just the basic phenomenon, the everything combined. And there isn't anything on the other side except to sort of
balding.
Like nitpick.
I think it's balding.
I don't even know what that is.
One, that means balding is when people bald and they're seeing
a
creature like man covered in hair. It's a no. I don't know.
I don't know what that is.
Okay. I don't know. I don't just don't think there has to be one. I don't think there has to be a grand unifying. I think it can be just. I think it's wrong for some. Well, because Radford's basically a professional skeptic, so he's just going to poo-poo anything. It also shows, in my opinion, that it's so mistrusting of people.
I don't think he is a skeptic. I think he just doesn't.
Are you still there?
No. Can you hear me? Hello.
I'm here.
No, we lost Scott.
There he goes.
He's gone. Wait, I will try to get him back. If I can't, we'll end the show. It's trying. All right, I think we lost Scott.
No. What was that about the magazine? We're one step above it.
All right. Well, I think we've got a long show anyway. I mean, we've been going now for coming up on an hour and 43 minutes. So that's a good long show, and we'll put a fork in it. Do you have anything to add, sort of to summarize, any sort of?
It's just so sad.
It's depressing, isn't it?
I mean,
it's really depressing.
I'm. You know, you said the part about how if you're uncomfortable with being associated with a Bigfoot subject, you shouldn't have your real name out there. And I'm kind of getting to that point where I'm thinking, I don't really want to be, I don't know if I want my name tagged onto this anymore. But no, I just, for the people out there, you know, people who are sitting on the fence for any of this, or God forbid, are actually under the tent for Dyer or Ketchum or any of these people, you just really need to take a big step back. This is not about it's not about us versus them. It's not about science versus Bigfoot. Bigfoot should be a scientific proponent, and science is a proponent of discovery. So don't look at it like that. Don't look at it through bias, and especially don't let that bias be inflamed by the people who are trying to take advantage of you. Just take a real serious, critical look at this. And I think if you do, you'll realize what we've all come to realize here, and that is that everything we've talked about on the show today has been bullshit.
Yep. I'm going to add Scott back. I'm going to try one more time so he can put in his last word, and then we'll wrap this up. And we're not going to get him. Okay. So for Scott, what I'll say what I'm sure Scott was about to say, in that he's got a complete change of heart. He believes that the Patterson-Gimlin film is 100% real. He can't believe that he was so oblivious to the truth for all these years. And I'm sure he would have said that if he'd been here. Yeah, but otherwise I agree with you. I look back at this week that we just went through, and I find myself depressed, and I cannot wait to get back out in the woods and get away from all of it, actually, because it's sad.
I said a while back that when the Ketchum thing finally did go down the toilet, that it was going to be like the K2 extinction boundary in Bigfootery, that it was going to take a lot of people with it. And when I said that, I initially meant the people who had fallen in love with this and who were believing it, and then came to the realization that it was false. But now I'm really starting to think that not only is it going to be a lot of those people, a lot of the people who got burned by putting their faith in this, it's going to be a lot of people who saw this coming from miles away and still to this day have to sit here and see people supporting it and buying into it and believing it. I think there's going to be a certain percentage of people who are going to look at that and just say, I can't associate with this anymore. I agree. Yeah, and that's sad.
Thanks, Melba.
Yep. Thanks a lot, butthole.
All right. And with that, butthole will be the last word of the show. Butthole.
The party's over. It's time to call it a day. They've burst your pretty balloon and taken the moon away. It's time to wind up the masquerade. Just make your mind. The piper must be paid. The party's over. The candles flicker and dim. You danced and dreamed through the night. It seemed to be right.